Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. You know, I've been highlighting different aspects of Pursuit, and of course, last week was no exception. We featured four of our attendees on the roundtable, and weren't they fantastic? I'm so excited about meeting all of them in August, as well as meeting you. Whether or not you have registered yet, if you haven't, you need to do that. Go to boundless.org/pursuit. I want to make note of other people that are going to be at Pursuit that are very near and dear to our hearts, namely Steve and Candace Waters, the founders of Boundless. They are both going to be here. Not only are they both going to be here, but Candace will be featured in our Q&A panel on Friday night, basically, of the conference itself. And then Steve and Candace will be doing a workshop on bearing fruit that lasts on Saturday during free time. So this is your opportunity. If you've ever wanted to come and give Candace Waters a hug, if you've ever wanted to ask her a question in person, if you have ever wanted to ask Steve what he means by clear the decks when he talks about that, this is your opportunity. They will be here and they are looking forward to meeting you. So another motivator to come to Pursuit. Remember, registration only goes through July 24th. You have to register by July 24th. So hop on over to boundless.org/pursuit. Okay, now on to the show. So first up, I want to tell you that later in the show, as always, we have our inbox segment and we have one of our counselors here to talk to a guy who wrote in. And basically, he is dating a girl that he likes, but his mom does not necessarily like this girl. In fact, she has indicated that the Holy Spirit has told her that he shouldn't be dating this girl. So what is this guy to do? Fortunately, Glenn Lutyens is here to weigh in on that. Then for our culture segment, we have Dr. Tim Irwin. Tim has counseled and consulted with some of the major CEOs in the world today, some Fortune 500 companies. He's very well connected, all on the subject of leadership and impact. What makes a great leader? What makes one that just quite frankly fizzles out and dies and or gets fired and or doesn't even have any influence in the sphere that he's in? So Tim has great insights for that are applicable to us wherever you are. And keeping with that theme, we're deciding to do a roundtable today that's going to feature kind of leadership on the front end of your journey. So we have assembled here three panelists from our Focus Leadership Institute. We love the folks over at FLI. And I have Jordan, Jenny, and Nikki here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Great to have you. You are all just bright young faces. We're excited to see that here at Boundless. And you guys, because you go to, Focus Leadership Institute, obviously have to occasionally talk about leadership there, I'm assuming.
Yes.
So we're going to tap into what you know, what you've learned so far, and kind of what your aspirations are towards leadership as we have this conversation. So the first thing I want to ask is kind of what generally, I mean, just from your own experience, what does leadership mean to you when you hear kind of the term leadership? And in your short experience, because you guys are, how long have you been going to classes now?
We've been here since June 5th.
Okay, so just recent. Like a couple of weeks, basically. Okay, so I'm sure you just have massively overhauled your views of leadership in 2 weeks. Maybe not, but what does leadership mean to you, and has anything changed or started to shift since having these conversations?
Well, I think before I came here, I thought leadership was mostly just bossing people around.
Because, oh, it is some of that, trust me.
Because that's mostly what I had seen in ministries back home. Because I'd had a lot of strong personalities in leadership. But coming here, I realized that leadership is less about being the most strong or being the most powerful person, but being able to take a stand for what you believe and being able to encourage people to take a stand with you.
Good.
Yeah, I think my immediate thought is the concept of servant leadership, looking at Christ's example, and just going along with that within the body of Christ and leadership in there. I think something that we've been able to see at FLI just recently has been all the different types of people we have here. We have people from not only all over the country, but different personalities and different different strong points, and getting to see how each of those people contribute to the group. So whereas we are a collective group of people, and yet each person has these different attributes that really really bring something to the table, and I think that leadership involves that, using your God-given talents and what you've been gifted with to help those around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say, Nikki. It's kind of, there's people all over the country just gathered here in one place, and there's pretty much the same goal,
mm-hmm.
To learn about biblical worldview and really seize the world around us using that biblical worldview that we're learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, yeah, it's been a really great experience. Dr. Del Tackett, he's a really wise man. Yeah. And yeah.
He's doing a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
So how would you guys say, I mean, because I think, you know, most people your age are either like, I'm just trying to finish school, or I'm just trying to get even started in the world and even understand what my place is. What does, how do you currently lead? If you had to think of maybe it's even hard to think of yourself as a leader in whatever role you have, but what does that look like for you right now where you are?
It may sound minuscule, but right now it's leading myself.
Okay. That's a good place to start.
Yeah. Just trying to figure out what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
and taking initiative in each scenario that I'm in day to day.
What do you have to discipline yourself most in?
Mostly, we have a lot of reading to do.
Oh, okay.
And
a lot of reading.
Honestly, I've probably done more reading already than I have in the past semesters of college.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
and so just being diligent and being disciplined in that, and taking initiative to start conversations with the other people in our groups,
mm-hmm.
about the topics. That's a form of leadership, I would mm-hmm. say.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think just for me, I'm used to following other people around. I will latch on to people and mimic what they do. And that's typically the way that I live my day-to-day life. But coming here, I was reminded that, well, it's okay to take a stand and to lead other people, and to be strong and be courageous and not always have to follow other people around.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of just the phrase leading by example. So whether or not that's actually in a formal structure, I know I go to a Christian college and I love that. And one of the things I really appreciate there is the opportunities for different ministries. One of those ministries is discipleship ministry. So it's set up as there's a discipleship leader and a group of either girls or guys. And that is sort of a formal leadership role. And you can kind of see, okay, this is the designated leader and they have these responsibilities. They're leading a discussion. They're having just different job roles in a sense, but I think that where you really can see leadership is when the behind the scenes work is not just leading the discussion or you know heading off a project, but in the one on one conversations that you have with people and how you're sharing your own life and your own experiences and what God has been teaching each of us individually and sharing that with others. So I think it's really like, then that looks like, God, this is how you're leading me, and I'm telling someone else about how God is leading me, and that almost has this indirect effect of mm-hmm. leadership in that way.
Yeah, that's good. Jenny, I want to come back to something that you said about, you know, you're naturally kind of the person that latches onto people.
Yeah.
So we all talk about leadership, and I think it is something kind of in vogue to talk about. You know, we all go to classes, and there are all kinds of seminars on leadership and whatever. But the fact is, there are some people who are more trend towards leadership-type positions or have that kind of personality, and some people are just like, you know, I actually function better as a follower-type person, all right? So how do you reconcile what you're learning at the Institute with a natural inclination to really just find people that inspire you and want to latch onto them?
I think it's mostly just a day-to-day practice of reminding myself, okay, well, I'm here at the Institute, and even though I'm not a naturally inclined leader, I'm not naturally inclined to lead large groups of people, I'm here to learn how to be a leader. And maybe my style of leading will be different, and maybe it won't fit into a specific mold that I've noticed in other people. It's still important.
Mm-hmm.
And I still will probably be called to lead in many different situations, even though I'm not naturally inclined to lead.
Mm-hmm. Is it kind of hard when you're in a room or you're assigned a group project and like those extroverts jump in every time and they're like, everyone, here's what we're going to do. And then you're like, I don't think so.
Yes, that is actually really hard. Because I'm also a really good listener. I will listen to everybody's ideas first before I even jump into what my ideas are. And so sometimes I have to remind myself, okay, I can talk first. It's a good thing. And mm-hmm. I can contribute. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a skill I have to practice.
Yeah, I think that's really cool how there are, again, like the different personality types. Like you mentioned, like either the introverted or extroverted. And I think, at least I know personally, sometimes it's like, okay, I need to watch myself and check myself to not try to overpower other people or to not try to be the first one to speak up or to have my ideas first on the table. And something that I had heard recently, I can't remember where it was from, but really stuck with me. It was when you shine Christ more than you shine yourself, people notice, the world takes notice. And I think that's like something that goes along with leadership, is not just knowing when to take the lead and step up and yes, to show initiative, but to also know when to, like you were saying, Jenny, like listening. That's super valuable. If you just have everybody shouting and trying to get their ideas out there, that's great. You can have all these great ideas, but can't hear any of them. Doesn't do you any good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you guys say, what leaders, big or small, inspire you that have either impacted you directly or ones that, you know, you know about or have learned from example, or maybe you've read some of their stuff or you've watched their webcasts or preaching or whatever?
Well, I know for me, I go to a really small private college. And so I get to know my professors really well. And that's definitely something that happens here at the Institute. But I just know that back home, I'm able to really look up to a lot of my professors and a lot of my friends because I can ask them a lot of questions. And the fact that they listen to me, it is a really good quality to see in people. And I really do appreciate that in a lot of people that teach me and, you know, lead me my day-to-day life.
I would say he's very well known, John Piper. Mm-hmm. I just think he's a very theologically sound man. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to watch him. He came to my school. I go to Liberty University, and he spoke at one of our convocations. And he lays everything out, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything. He just says how it is. And I think doing that is a big part of leadership as well, because you don't want to not give everyone all the details. And he really does that, and I admire that.
Mm-hmm. One of my best friends was our residence assistant for the dorms last year. And just seeing her leadership in that scale, you might say, like, oh, that's a smaller scale leadership position. But she was, like I said, the RA for her 31 other girls. And just seeing her lead in such a way that was by example and that was attractively winsome. That's something that we talk about, that phrase, a lot here at FLI, is being attractively mm-hmm. winsome. We're representing Christ in everything we do. And like I said, my friend Ella did an amazing job of just living her life joyfully and fully, just fully hopeful and joyful in Christ. And that, just seeing people seeing her live her life, would just inspire them and encourage them. And so I think that sort of leadership, even though it's not necessarily like an instructional or like a sermon or something more didactic like that, but just getting to see her put people first and really live out people are more important than things.
Mm-hmm. I've always liked to, when I've looked at leaders, whether, you know, just leaders that have directly been in my life, people on a more small scale, and then the big time leaders that have a lot of prominence and a lot of position, I've always admired the ones that are not yes men. Mm-hmm. So the ones that aren't just going to toe the party line or aren't just going to say mm-hmm. what everyone wants to hear or aren't just going to say what the ultimate person in authority wants to hear, but the person who's truly going to do the best for their people mm-hmm. and the best for the situation, and ultimately for Christians, the best thing that will truly honor the Lord. And again, that comes back to what you guys were saying, I think, about taking a stand. So what, in light of all that you're learning, in light of what you've learned so far, what do you feel are your aspirations toward leadership? Like, how does your calling play out when you think of, here's where I need to grow in order to become the type of leader I want to become, or here's, you know, the type of thing that maybe I need to take a risk on, or something I need to move into to give it a shot? What does that look like for you maybe in the next 2 to 3 years?
I'd say getting like a vote of confidence. Mm-hmm. I'd say, because without confidence, leadership is obviously very hard. And just building that up would probably benefit me the most, because I don't know, in certain situations I'm not as confident as I would like to be, and like I see other people who are just like, they're go-getters and they just attack the problem, and sometimes I'll hang back and see how that's done. Mm-hmm. So hopefully from this experience I would maybe gain some more of that. Yeah. And be able to take initiative sooner, maybe.
That's good. Yeah. And you have to finish all that reading.
Yeah, too. That too.
That's the first in line.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people tend to think that they just need to jump out and try something new and start like a new organization or a new change instead of building on, you know, the past successes of other people. And so I think just my takeaway with this summer at the Institute, I really hope to remember the successes that past leaders have done and to build on those, like especially with my grandparents. They've shown me a great way to live the Christian life, and I'm hoping that I can take their success in their Christian life and build on that and build on what they passed on down to me and be able to pass that on down to the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, definitely like the name of where we're at is focus, and I think that's something that I definitely need to work on, and that would directly contribute to just improving in leadership and having the focus to stick with the task or the idea that I'm working with and diligently see that through to completion. I can get very excited about, oh, there's this thing or this thing and this thing, and just the imagination kind of goes, and I'm an only child, so, you know, I gotta get creative mm-hmm. here. I think to stay focused and really cultivate that self-discipline, and just seeing that whole process as being worthwhile and being this time of refinement is good, even if it's not exactly clear, it's not exactly the most fun thing, or maybe not the most entertaining. It's like, okay, God, this is worthwhile.
Yeah, those are good thoughts. And great to see where you all are, being relatively young. You know, it's not like you guys have it all figured out or even know where you'll be in 2 to 3 years.
Nope.
But thanks for sharing your thoughts and for being willing to dream and being willing to lead where God puts you. So I'll be looking forward to seeing where you land and how you're leading in the coming years.
You are holding me together with hands that hold forever. God, you are strong. And when the storm around me rages, your love never changes. God, you are strong. And you are with me, Lord. Always with me, Lord. When the
Well, folks, as we start up our culture segment for this week, I'm very privileged to welcome to the studio Dr. Tim Irwin. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Lisa.
Great to have you here at Focus on the Family and the Boundless Show, talking to our audience. Tim is actually, he's an organizational psychologist and management consultant. I'm not even entirely sure what that means, but he works with a number of corporate leaders as well as global companies and speaks a lot on leadership and other topics, which is what we're going to talk about today, because Tim is the author of Impact: Great Leadership Changes Everything. And of course, we know that all y'all out there are aspiring leaders in some sense. In fact, we have so many, even in the Christian realm, leadership conferences, you know, that we're encouraged to go to, whether leadership in the church or in ministries or in our own workplace. And so, Tim, a real privilege to have you here today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
This is going to be a lot of fun. So the first thing I want to ask, okay, you have this big title and you've done all this stuff, but I want to know if you could reinvent yourself at this point in your life. And I mean, you don't have to throw your age out there, but let's just say you're not a 20-something. If you could do that, what would be your big dream?
Well, you know, in some ways, I did reinvent myself about 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
I have spent most of my career as an organizational psychologist and management consultant working with often large companies. And I felt over those years, I'd learned a lot from my clients. And I'd begun to form a message about leadership. And I'd observed leaders that did well, leaders that didn't do well. And so I wanted to start writing about that. So that was a reinvention. And I'm still going through that process of transitioning into more writing and more speaking.
Sure. Yeah. And that's definitely a transition. I'm doing some of that myself. But at least, okay, so it's not like you're not like, I want to be a trapeze artist or I want to be a landscaper. It's not something crazy. No crazy departures.
I have occasional thoughts about that, and then something brings me quickly back to reality.
It's one of those little wake-up calls and self-examinations that we'll talk about as reflected in the book. Okay, well, the first thing I want to talk about, because, you know, you deal a lot with probably the big-time power players, CEO types, and you talk to them and to people that really are walking out leadership in a very structural way. But I get the understanding from the book that leadership isn't just about having a title or being an expert in something. But yet we always hear this, okay, well, some people have to be chiefs and then some people have to be Indians. But what really, is everyone a leader? What should we be thinking here?
Well, let me say something as part of background. I ask groups when I speak often, how many of you want to make an impact with your life? Mm-hmm. And I get about 100% response every time I ask that question, because I think everybody wants their lives to count for something. Mm-hmm. We want to be significant. We want our lives to count for more than just fighting traffic and going to a boring job every day that we don't really like.
Right.
So people want to make an impact with their lives. Now, I think leadership is about influence. Now, I have two sons in their late 20s, early 30s, and I'm particularly watching with great interest both of them at work. My younger son has been put in a position where he has a national responsibility in his job, but nobody reports to him. In other words, he has no formal authority. But he has to lead marketing, he has to lead sales, he has to lead product manufacturing and a number of other functions, but he has no formal authority. And so he has to use influence. And that's really what leadership is about. I think this company is very wise because they're teaching him to lead with influence rather than with authority, because even people who have great authority don't use it.
Yeah.
They can't use it effectively.
Yeah, and that definitely becomes problematic. Well, you say also in the book, you talk about, and I think this is a little bit dovetailing with that, that management is positional, leadership is personal. And you talk about, you know, that idea of what personal means when it comes to that influence. But how can you get, in light of that, you also talk about how you give unreservedly to a mission and to understand that. But how can you do that when your mission is basically like balancing spreadsheets? These people that are going into jobs and they feel like, I want to be this, but I'm in a cubicle and here I'm 24 years old. This is my job. Again, influence, understanding that vision.
I have high cholesterol. And so I have to go over to Emory University Clinic several times a year and get my blood drawn. And candidly, I don't like it. I don't think that going at 7 in the morning, the first thing of the day is getting my arm stuck with a sharp needle. I was over not long ago and I sat down and the young woman put me in the chair and put the arm in front of me and began to go about the various things they have to do to draw blood. And she was singing. And she was very pleasant. We talked a little bit and she was singing. And all of a sudden she said, okay, we're done. I said, you're kidding. She had literally drawn blood, and I had completely missed it. I said, hey, you're good at this. And she looked back at me, and she said, you better believe I'm good at this. She says, this is my calling. She says, I'm here to keep people healthy. Now, what happened in that short exchange was that she understood the larger purpose of her job. If your job was to go to work every morning and stick people in the arm with sharp needles, how exciting would that be? You know, how exciting would it be to sit in a cubicle and analyze numbers or run spreadsheets or whatever? But I encourage leaders to make sure that everybody in their organization has line of sight to the customer. Because if you know what you're trying to do and ultimately who you're serving, it puts a very different perspective on how we work.
That's good. And not even to mention the whole the lateral influence as well. Coworkers, the people that truly are in your sphere. And I think for Christians, that's a great thing to keep in mind as well. You know, leading by example in that sense.
I think leadership is about influence. And whether you're a corporate leader of a Fortune 500 company or somewhere down in the middle or even the bottom of the organization or a parent or a coach or a teacher, whatever, you're a leader. In other words, in that sense, we're all leaders because we have influence. But leader, the thing that makes leaders different, Lisa, is that they have disproportionate influence. Mm-hmm. In other words, they are able to exercise influence in a very constructive, helpful way.
So you, Tim, you talk a lot about the power and the value of self-examination. And I want to know, you know, specifically in the book, you delve into blind spots that leaders have. In what you've seen, what are some of the biggest blind spots of ineffective leaders? What are they missing?
Well, let me say first that I feel self-awareness is really important. In my last book, I wrote about people, about very powerful leaders that have derailed. Mm-hmm. And one of the common denominators among people that derail is a lack of self-awareness. So I feel like being self-aware and learning to study ourselves, to learn about our strengths, to learn to mitigate our weaknesses is very important. And so I find that leaders are often not aware of things they're saying to themselves. I happen to believe that we act on our beliefs. And if we tell her something that's not true, we're going to act on that. And so something I hear leaders say, maybe not in these words, but they often say something like, I'm the smartest guy in the room. Or, hey, it's just a rounding error. I don't have to worry about that. I can just add that $20 to my expense statement for the month. Or, I don't have to follow the normal rules. Those are things, those are lies that people sometimes tell themselves. And that's a major blind spot.
Which is interesting because you walk through that list. And as I read that, the 10 lies that leaders love, I was like, don't these people even want to be liked? I mean, these people, like people that believe that, I'm just like, they're just a jerk. I mean, why are there all these leaders out there that are just jerks? And I know I have friends who have jerk bosses. And I'm just like, how are these guys still in their positions?
Well, guess what? We've all known the person that started out their career and was a perfectly likable individual. Mm-hmm. We enjoyed maybe working for them or admired them. And over time, they got a bigger job, a bigger title, more money, bigger office, all the trappings of power. And something happened along the way. That power began to work on them, and they became a jerk, mm-hmm. to use your word. And that's what happens, and that's why power is so dangerous. Power is this, it's like carbon monoxide. It's odorless and tasteless, and it works on us, and it erodes our core. We talked earlier in the interview about the person inside us, our core, and power erodes that. And so it allows these false beliefs to drift in and lodge in our core.
So you... You actually like kind of getting back to that and what you're saying there. What would you say then if someone needs to recognize that? And even if they don't think, I mean, there may be a person who's like, oh, I don't have blind spots, you know, and they're probably the biggest candidate for for figuring this out. What's the right way to ask for feedback then? How can someone truly invite people to be that mirror, you know, because it's kind of awkward to say, you know, to your team or your subordinates, okay, well, I need you to talk to me about this. And, you know, they don't want to be your counselors or whatever. How to best get feedback?
Well, I find a lot of leaders are truth starved. Mm-hmm. And the reason is they're cut off from feedback. In other words, they don't have trouble speaking truth into their lives. And so I encourage everybody to create an environment on their teams, in their organizations, where feedback is given freely, mm-hmm. and where it's valued and appreciated. And I think feedback is a way that we calibrate what we're doing. So you may not ask the whole team, but I would certainly ask trusted advisors, get people that say, how'd you feel the meeting went? You know, what did you think about what I said to Sally this morning? Was that out of place? Mm-hmm. There was getting some calibration, getting some feedback. Otherwise, you're going to be truth-starved.
Mm-hmm. So in light of that, you also, one of the other things you talk about in the book are the three faces of leadership. And the first is kind of how you present yourself, your style, what that looks like. The second is your actions, what people actually see or hear you say. And then finally, your core. Can you explain and help us understand how we can actively work on our core? Because I feel like, and feel like you're explaining that that's going to be reflective of those other levels as well.
Well, and what I'm suggesting is that style is important, mm-hmm. our actions is important, but what's really important is our core. Mm-hmm. And I say in the book that we have to learn to lead from within. In other words, ultimately, if we lead from our core, we're going to be a much greater, more effective leader. Mm-hmm. Now, your question is, okay, so how do we strengthen our core? Mm-hmm. Core is a strong metaphor today just in terms of athletics mm-hmm. and physical development, but it's also—
You had the chapter on Pilates.
Exactly, exactly.
Very much a core workout.
Yeah. And Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. And the word heart in that verse is not referring to the organ in our chest pumping blood. It's referring to our core. And what the writer of Proverbs is saying is guard your core. In other words, guard it, develop it, take care of it, because it's going to influence everything that ever happens to you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And so I suggest some things about doing that. Becoming more self-aware. We've talked about that. Being very careful with power. Mm-hmm. When you get power, you just need to be very intentional about getting that. Making sure that you get feedback. One of the things that I encourage people to do is develop a personal board of advisors. Hmm. We all, all our companies have a board of directors. Why don't we as individuals have a personal board of advisors? And you have a younger audience on this program, and that's when I started to get mentors. These people may not have known that they were in fact being asked to be a mentor. But I would take these people to breakfast. I would talk to them about challenges I had in my work or life or whatever, and I'd get their advice. And we all need to have that personal board of advisors.
Mm-hmm. And were you just saying to pick those people? Did you just identify certain qualities in them or things that you wanted to be or become or understand the position they were in?
I picked people who I thought were wise, people that I respected, people that were older, who'd had more life experience than I had, people who I thought could really contribute something to my own development as a person. Mm-hmm. It'd be easy to say, well, I'm going to put my three best friends as my mm-hmm. personal board of advisors. But probably not good decisions. They're kind of where I am. Mm-hmm. They're in the same place. Mm-hmm. So I think picking people that have a few more rings around the track than I do is very advisable.
That's good. So how, getting back to understanding our audience and the young adult audience that's just struggling to even get a job or keep a job or figure out where they're going to be in 10 years, how can someone without position currently exercise influence? And when, especially when it comes to areas of, difference, I'm not talking about something hugely like weirdly, unethical or whatever, but when is it right to rock the boat and when should a junior employee or whatever keep their mouth shut?
I find in every company they have a set of unwritten rules. And if you're in your 20s or 30s, you may not know those rules exist, but trust me, they do. And that's why having a mentor inside the company to tell you what those rules are. Mm. I was talking with a young man recently, and he said, I really need a raise. I want to get a raise. And I said, well, in your company, there's a way to go about that. Mm. And before you ask for that raise, you better find out what that process is. And so he did. And what he learned was it's really bad in our culture to ask for a raise. Mm-hmm. What you do is you work hard, you develop a great reputation, and then when somebody comes to you with a bigger opportunity, you take it. In other words, that's how you get recognized in this culture. Now, that may not be true in other organizations, but certainly in this particular one it is. Mm-hmm. So learning those unwritten rules. It's frightening to me that I've seen studies that show that up to 80% of people hate their jobs. Hmm. And I meet young people that are in that category. And that's tragic. Lisa, we're going to spend at least 100,000 hours over the course of our life at work. And we need to find something that we can be passionate about. And sometimes it takes courage to leave a job. In other words, jobs are pretty hard to find right now. That's no secret. But I think sometimes we have to exercise that courage, or we have to show initiative. We have to go to our boss. One of the things that I think is so important, and I've talked to so many people in authority about this, it's amazing. We all have issues and problems at work we're trying to get solved. And so if I can make my boss's job easier or lighter, or I can solve problems, that's a great thing. That's what's going to get me noticed. In other words, if I do things at work that are going to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people, find those problems that are plaguing your boss and get busy helping solve them.
Hmm. That's great. We actually just had Jimmy Collins, former president of Chick-fil-A, talk to us about that and just said, find out what your boss doesn't like to do and start doing it, you know, and find a way of supporting that boss and taking on those responsibilities. You'll make yourself indispensable.
Jimmy's a great friend and one of the wisest people I know.
Mm-hmm. He's a neat guy. And he gave us some chicken, so now he's a big well, we're big fans
that's good.
Of him. Okay, so let's in light of that then, you know, that whole idea, and it's funny when you're talking about that, about, you know, how to ask for a raise or whatever, because I think a lot in the millennial generation think they don't want to put up with an established corporate culture. You know, they're going to go in and they're like, I need to change that because I need my, you know, this is the generation of trying to revolutionize things or trying to break the rules or whatever. But you're saying it is valuable to examine what's been established and work within it while you can.
Well, there's a tricky balance in there, and wisdom tells us the difference, mm-hmm. because sometimes we do need to challenge the status quo. Mm-hmm. But you have to go about it carefully. In other words, if you're a new kid on the block in the organization and you come in and start talking about, well, we need to change that, I find that trust in us is like a bank account. We have to make deposits over time. And so when we introduce something that's different, or what I like to call idiosyncratic ideas, when we introduce those into the workplace, we need to have a healthy balance in our trust account. So the people say, wow, that's kind of a different idea, but this person is smart and they know what they're doing, and so let's listen. Mm-hmm. But for somebody to come into a new job and start trying to break all the rules or trying to start tossing out all these new ideas is probably ill-advised.
Yeah. Well, and you actually use the example in the book of Mark Zuckerberg and how, yeah, you know, maybe if you founded Facebook and are a multi-billionaire, you can wear your hoodie to work. But maybe if you're just starting out, you know, it's your new job, you might want to dress the part and be respectful.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think one of the lies, and I say that advisedly, that millennials have to be very careful about is that I'm entitled. Mm-hmm. I'm entitled to this. Mm-hmm. And that's something I hear frequently about that generation, that hey, you know, I should go straight to the corner office, or I, because they see a Mark Zuckerberg or somebody like him. But most of us have to pay some dues. Most of us have to get inside that organization, figure it out, work, and so on. Mm-hmm. So being willing to pay some dues, I think, is a healthy thing.
Yeah. So, Tim, for that young adult that maybe has gone in, has paid those dues, has worked their way up, and has shown themselves, has proven good character, and now they're maybe being offered a position of leadership or they're being given a little bit more responsibility, how can they discern best whether they're taking a leadership role for the best reason, or it is somewhere that they should move into, or if it's somewhere, you know, if they should be looking in other avenues? I mean, just checking motives and checking, you know, because a lot of young adults, I think, make a big pivotal decision and then they find themselves, oh my goodness, 10 years later, here I still am. But something that's kind of a pivotal decision, how do they know that they're in it for the right reasons?
You know, there's a fundamental point of departure that I think is really important for people to be thoughtful about. And that is, am I somebody who enjoys getting work done through other people? Do I like developing other people? Or am I more of an individual contributor? Do I like to go off and do brilliant things and work on research projects or analyze and so on? And that's a real difference. Both of those people can be highly valued in any organization. But I think for people to be self-aware and to say, you know, I really like developing people, I like helping younger people come along, that means I think going the management track is a good idea. Mm-hmm. But if you're somebody who's a little eccentric and really likes to just kind of go off and try out all these new interesting, innovative ideas, you may be more of an individual contributor. And I think that's an important line of departure for most people.
Okay, well, that's good. What about those of us who maybe like the idea of developing people, but we're also pretty eccentric and we don't know what to do? maybe I'm just like, I have a split personality here. I'm going to have to figure that out. It's a little questionable.
I think people will follow a leader who they believe is authentic. Mm-hmm. That's why having an intact core is so important. Mm-hmm. People sense that. They can smell inauthenticity a mile away. Mm-hmm. So having an intact core is something that draws out the best in other people. And I think if people, even if you're eccentric, I mean, that's fine as long as people know that you're really for them, you want their best. That's fine. They'll follow you because they think you're authentic.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and end this there. Those are good points about, wow, maybe there is a decision to make. I've never heard that before, Tim, of, you know, you might be cut out for individual contribution. That is a unique spot for certain people. I think we tend to be told, especially in the millennial generation, that if you're going to be anything, you have to go this leadership track that's going to be big time management and all of that. So that's a good thing to do. And another great reason to examine yourself, develop your core, and go beyond that. Well, the book is Impact, Great Leadership Changes Everything. I've been talking to Tim Irwin, author of that book, and leadership consultant extraordinaire, a new friend to us here at The Boundless Show. Thanks for weighing in and really acting as a mentor to us, even in these few minutes, Tim.
My privilege. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Here I am, everything. Search my heart, set me free. Here I am, listening. Father, speak, here I am.
Well, we are finishing out this week's show with our inbox, as we always do. Great show this week, and always great to have a varied group of perspectives and just different angles sometimes on the same topic. Well, I have a question for Glenn Lutyens, who's in the studio with me. Hey, Glenn.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be with you.
Always great to have you back. It seems like we just throw you all kinds of things.
That's
You're kind
right.
of our jack of all trades when it comes to answering questions. Glenn, of course, is one of our counselors here at Focus on the Family. Remember that if you have a question beyond what has been answered either on the show or on our site, do call us at 1-800-A and the word family, 1-800-A-FAMILY, and ask to speak to one of our counselors. They have a wealth of advice as well as resource recommendations and even referrals to a counselor in your area. All right, Glenn, here we go. This guy is saying, I brought a girl home from college whom I'm dating. My family was happy to meet her, except for my mom. She has this feeling she gets from the Holy Spirit, and it says we aren't for each other. This girl I'm dating is a Christian, but she's not the strongest Christian in the world. She had some rough years and is coming back from a lot of pain and hurt. Should I end it with this girl, or should I try to stick it out? I really like her, but if I'm going to be at odds with my mom, I'm not sure it will be worth it.
Well, a pretty important and interesting question as far as, you know, what input we take from our parents when it comes to dating and selecting a spouse. I think one of two things could be going on. I mean, it may be that that his mom does have some wisdom and insight. There's maybe a level of objectivity that she has that he's not able to see just from the emotions he's encountering. But it also could be a scenario where there's some manipulation that's taking place. You know, there may be, and in some situations, there's not an individual on planet Earth that would be good enough for their son or daughter. So mm-hmm. sometimes that scenario can occur. I think what's important is to get other input. Are there other people who, let's say if it's a college, this is a girl that he's dating from college, is there a college group leader, somebody who knows both of them that's really willing to be open and honest about what they're seeing? I think that's really wise input to have. But I think it also can be valuable to take a look at that component that this young man asks mentions as far as the fact that she's not as spiritually strong. Now, the passage in 2 Corinthians 6 that talks about not being unequally yoked, there's kind of a couple different ways that people will tend to look at that. One, probably the most common way, is that if one person's a Christian, it means the other person needs to be a Christian as well, which I think it does mean, but I think it means more than that. I think the word picture that Paul gives there of not being yoked is more than just being in the same field or the same corral or the same stall. He's talking about being effective together. And if there's somebody who has a deep hunger for the Lord, a deep desire to grow, and there's somebody else who's in the kingdom, but there's not as deep a desire to grow, yokes don't work very well when two people are walking at different paces. Hmm. Now, it may just be that she has recently come to know Christ, and that's not a knock. That doesn't mean that, well, because she's only come to know Christ recently, that she can't be a good spouse. But a person really needs to see, what is that relationship like with the Lord? You know, not just for the, you know, first month or two, but is a person there for the long haul? Is their love for Christ really their passion, or is it their love for the relationship that kind of fuels their love for Christ? Because sometimes that can be the case.
Yeah, excellent point, Glenn. I do think, you know, yeah, I was thinking as I read this, yeah, if this feeling, you know, from the Holy Spirit or whatever is legit, then it will be backed up by other evidence that points to the fact that this might not be the best match. And so, yeah, it's a little vague in saying she's not the strongest Christian in the world. That's why I think what you gave as far as guidelines is super, because really, you know, does she claim Christ? Is she growing in her faith? You know, where she began that journey doesn't matter as much as where she's headed.
And there's also the element of, with the pain that she's had. And it's not that if a person has experienced a lot of pain that it disqualifies them from being a good spouse, but it's, what have they done with the pain? Mm-hmm. You know, have they gotten help? Has there been a pursuit of getting counsel or working through some of the issues in life? If a person has dealt with their pain, God can use that in a very powerful way. But unfortunately, a lot of times when people experience pain, we do the dodge and avoid. We try to run from it. We bury it. Mm-hmm. And that usually allows, you know, later years in our life to be a disaster when we approach it that way.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Glenn, for weighing in on that.
My pleasure.
Okay, folks, that's it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with your question, and hop over to the blog and comment on this week's show so that we can get your thoughts about that. While you're over on our site, make sure that you click on Pursuit 2014 and register if you haven't already. Again, we're coming into our final few weeks of registration here, heading towards July 24th. We want to make sure that you're all accounted for before then. So boundless.org/pursuit. We'll see you around next week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.